From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
I'm Emily Rooney. This is Boston Public Radio. Well, if anything puts our politicians to the test, it's got to be a snowstorm. That's right. Governor Patrick is still getting mixed reviews for his travel ban and what could be a first in his tenure at City Hall. Mayor Tom Menino is apologizing for the slow going on removal of the city streets. And also, I'm wondering if the president isn't going to address this tonight in the State of the Union address with global warming. I mean, it's a crisis right here in our community. You know, Winthrop, Scituate, all the coastal communities, and projected rising tide over the next 25 years could put a good deal of our coastline. And hey, let's face it, it's tourism, among other things, for us. So joining me here in the studio to talk politics, as usual, are Charlo Chippio, a principal at Chippio Strategies, and Aaron O'Brien, associate professor of political science at UMass Boston. Welcome, both of you.
Thanks.
Great to be here.
So I was walking over to Newbury Street today to get some coffee. I know I'm incredibly lazy, but I could only walk because usually you can just kind of pull up and run in. But
yep.
So morning.
Not today.
The snow banks in front of the meters are like 6-7 feet into the street. So this morning they were coming down with plows, one scoop into a dumpster, one scoop into.
They need the revenue.
This is going to be a project. So the fact that the mayor is lifting that parking ban, because the other street that is just like, like now it's like a ghost town, is Commonwealth, where people park on both sides of the street. This is a wide street, but I don't know how they're going to park on Commonwealth Avenue. I don't see how they can do it unless they take every scrap of snow right up to the meters, and they're going to get that done by 6.
And where are they going to put it? Unless
They have these melters.
But it's melting is a good thing. But yeah, I mean, it's a major – parking in Boston is miserable. Add snow and misery. I didn't know we knew such misery. So
now you live in Southeast.
Yes,
but you said
I do.
It's not that bad except for on the
– I love a good snowstorm. Yeah, so I have to say I'm such an optimist about it. I'm like, it's not that bad. That said, I took a cab today here.
You did?
Right. Lose my parking spot?
See?
Oh, you mad?
Yeah.
Yes. So
you're not a lawn chair person, huh?
Well, a trash can person. Which I wish I was a lawn chair person.
Yeah. I was saying your neighborhood gets a bad rap because coming up Lincoln Street or wherever that thing is right here where somebody almost took me right off the road careening from side to side, there were several lawn chairs, barrels, you name it, holding spots. So it's not just your neighborhood.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. But it's definitely, as a political scientist, I want to get my anthropology friends over because there's an ethnography to be written about the rules, unknown or I should say unstated rules
we've had that discussion.
It's very
here.
Real. It's very real.
And, you can't stake it out before the snow falls.
No, but
yes.
You have 48
David
hours
Wedge
with
was
it.
Telling us that on Friday. That's right.
Yes. You have 48 hours with it. But, they did a great job on the main roads, but the side streets aren't good. It's a major task for – when Menino apologized, I was really surprised. But,
that was ridiculous.
Well,
3 days
in, they should have had school today. That's that's a little bizarre.
They had school yesterday in Needham. It was – Needham is
a little different because it's
residential. No,
you mostly have – most of you guys have driveways and places and garages.
Right. That's absolutely – but it's interesting because Newton did not and a lot of surrounding areas.
Well,
not.
What I had read in part was, the mayor, the tragedy that occurred where – sometimes
carbon
I do
monoxide.
Think – yeah, obviously, I know it's coming on today. I was thinking about sometimes we forget our politicians are human.
Yeah.
And if that happens on your watch, you're going to be very cautious. Now, I think there should have been school today. The side streets need to be done. But I do think that if that happened on my watch, I'd be pretty cautious as well.
Very, very slippery. Even Jim Browdy slipped coming in to work today. There were people slipping all over Newbury Street. So that, I'm sure that was part of it.
Mm-hmm.
The neighborhoods, the alleys are really slippery.
It brings up this ongoing issue that they had in their old show about his yak tracks. I'm sure that'll have to come back to life again.
We'll hope so. But on a more serious note, the projection that we're going to be getting more and more of these big storms. You wonder if the president is – it's not just about New England or, the tornadoes in the plain states and everything. It's like something is really afoot here. And, I don't know what's being discussed. I mean, geoengineering, but some things, building all these seawalls isn't the answer.
Well, when you see – what happened to our biggest population center, New York City and Sandy. And then, look, that's part of it. regardless of the substance, the fact that now, you know, these changes are affecting some of the biggest population centers in the country, some of the biggest economic centers in the country. Yeah, you're right. I would not be surprised to hear him talk
about it. I'd love
to
hear it as a part of the State of the Union, because I think something quite potent is potentially happening, that if you can make the argument that we can't afford global climate change, that brings – it's not just a soft – and I use air quotes there – soft environmental issue anymore. Like, oh, no, those environmentalists, they care so much. Now it's – we literally cannot afford global climate change. It is an economic impact that we can't do. I think that argument brings in individuals that were otherwise less interested.
Yeah. You know, yeah. It's interesting that you say that, because we're actually going to do a piece on Greater Boston tonight. And Adam Riley, who was over in Winthrop all day yesterday, came over to me and said, well, do we want a naysayer? And I said, well, what do you mean a naysayer? Or, you know, somebody who thinks that global warming isn't real. And I said, no, we're done with
right.
that.
Yeah.
There's not two sides to every
That's right.
argument. That argument is over.
The
done,
bias
thinny.
Of balance.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, yeah. False. False equivalency. False equivalency.
Exactly.
There is no equivalency here. So you won't be finding a naysayer tonight.
Well, they'll take care of Winthrop. As long as Bob DeLeo's there, Winthrop will be okay.
I don't know, though. Rubio is still a naysayer, and he's giving the Republican response.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because his state is more prone to traumatic weather than ours. And Florida has always been vulnerable, though. I mean, the Gulf states, they've always taken those big hits. But if he starts taking a couple of more, I mean, like if he gets smacked in the hurricane season this year and next year, he may change his tune.
When it's, you know, and he's already begun to moderate on some other things. So
right.
I would not be at all surprised to hear that.
He just doesn't want to say it because obviously he's running for president, and the base, the moneyed base that he has to initially appeal to, this is an issue that they sort of love, and it's a litmus test. So I think he might do a lot of the right things, but he won't, well, I don't think, say the right
but
thing.
But do you think it really is the moneyed base? Because, you know, I look at all these sort of different groups that are sprouting up right now to sort of try to beat back the Tea Party within the Republican Party. I think the money in the Republican Party is probably a little bit more rational. But
I totally agree. That's always the case.
Yeah.
You know, that it evens out. When it's a pocketbook issue, it evens out unless you're Sheldon Adelson or somebody.
Right.
And then
it just has been a litmus test, though. I don't know who's controlling it, but somebody in the Republican Party base says, if you say global climate change is real and made from by men and women that Republican has real issues. So I don't know who's controlling it within the Republican Party, but anybody who wants to win out of a primary right now can't.
The person on the Republican side who said that, there was this great op-ed by Cass Sunstein during the whole debate in, you know, over the elections last fall. And he was saying the only way to change anybody's position or argument that, you know, if you're an entrenched jihadist or whatever it is to have one of your own say something that makes you think differently, because no one else is going
to
change your
Nixon
mind.
Going to China. I mean, you know, that's absolutely true. But the other issue that brings up, I think, is that we don't really have an answer to yet is, you know, has the what lessons, if any, has the Republican Party drawn from this latest sort of bad election for them? You know, and I don't know. I don't know. I mean, one would think that they might look at it rationally and move to the center a little bit. I think some within the party are, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's still some strong forces in drawing them the other way. So,
what else is the president, you think, going to get in tonight? I mean, he's got to mention guns, but he's not going to come up with anything more specific, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's really unfortunate. It would be a political gamble for him
to
come out.
But what's the gamble? He's already elected.
Yeah.
But to come out and say, because he might not get it. And it would weaken him for further policy priorities. At least that's what the White House is thinking. But I would love it if he would come out strong on guns. It's almost 2 months now. I think there's a political opportunity lost there. But I think it'll be quick mention. We know some of the Newtown families will be there. Some of the Aurora families will be there.
Oh, and the family of that poor Chicago
girl
who performed at the inauguration and then was killed.
But, you know, I hope, and I don't mean to be pejorative on this, but it's just not like the shout outs. You know, when they look up to the top and that person stands up and they've had a tragedy and then on to the next. Gun control, I think, deserves more. And I think the president could do more, but I think he'll do it.
But it's, you know, it's interesting what you said before, Aaron, about, you know, these people are human. And I got to tell you, he was really devastated by New York. You could just see, you know, I don't think this is one. I mean, what he says or doesn't say tonight, I don't know. But clearly this is not one I don't think that he's just going to
I agree with you. I think he feels it very deeply on that, and that's why I think it should be a political gamble that he makes this instead of the, you know, State of the Union laundry list. Make it guns first, then economy, immigration, done.
But I think he's going to – I think it's going to be economy and deficit first too, because that's what all the numbers are showing, that those are the
yesterday
major concerns.
I did a little hit on the takeaway with three people who basically have my role at various news stations around the country, NPR stations. One was Texas, one was Florida, and one was us.
Mm-hmm.
And both Texas and Florida, the host said, gun control was going to be the big issue for their constituents, you know, not for the constituents of the politicians, I should say. But it's kind of the opposite of what we New Englanders are looking for.
So yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So that is something that they're going to be listening and to look for.
I don't know, though. But, you know, obviously Connecticut's in New England. And so I think it's more contested in Massachusetts, in New England more broadly, that a lot of people do want discussion on guns.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We want – but our – you know, lean is for more than Texas and Florida is for less.
Sure.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, yes. They want to have the debate all right. They, as long as it comes down on the fat side of more guns.
Well,
and
those kind of debates are more fun, right?
Yeah. You know, one of the things I mentioned yesterday, and it's kind of pie in the sky, but I was saying, you know, our whole innovation hub here doesn't really get the kind of respect it should. And, you know, New England kind of just goes along to get along. Massachusetts is not hurting as much as some of the other states in the country. And we're still developing jobs and our startups. But wouldn't it be great if that just became bigger and bigger and bigger and, like, you know, much brighter than the Silicon Valley? And, you know, I think sometimes, you know, residents here sort of confuse it with you know, eggheaddom instead of, like, jobs and the economy and the future of the world. I mean, everything from cancer drugs to just amazing. Mm-hmm. Did you see those robots in the paper yesterday that can climb hills sideways on things that look like legs? And, you know, that's right here in our backyard. So I say, you know, that's something that we need to keep pumping up here.
That's absolutely true. But I would say two quick things about that. One is that when it comes to that, Massachusetts is the ultimate example of the kid who was born on third base and thinks he hit a triple. I mean, because we should be doing so much better.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The fact of the matter is that, you know, over the last 20 years, the number of jobs in the United States has gone up by 25%. Massachusetts has the same number of jobs it did 20 years ago. So Massachusetts needs to do better.
I totally agree. I think there's a certain complacency. And I also think it stems back to this sort of a New England culture, this sort of – you know, New Englanders, when I teach, you know, civil rights politics, you know, students will say, but it was so much better here, right? You know, this sort of like we had this idea about ourselves that isn't always borne out by the facts. And on this innovation, like, of course, we're doing the most innovation without really checking those numbers, without checking those job numbers. Like, don't fall back on the way we used to be. Let's keep on going and promoting
that's what I'm saying.
That's right.
Rather than taking it for granted, really promoting it, investing in it. And it's almost like there's two worlds surrounding this. I mean, everybody's kind of proud of it, but I think a lot of people are very standoffish about it. They don't get it or not one of them, or they associate it with elitism.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't find it accessible.
I think that's what is innovation, right?
Yeah.
You know, unless you're the innovator,
exactly.
You don't know what the project is. So it's hard to get your mind around what innovation is. It seems like a buzzword to a lot of people who are, you know, driving a cab, you're going to school, you're teaching. What is innovation?
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that's right. Mm-hmm. And the economic impact of it.
Talking to Charlie Chipio from Chipio Strategies and Aaron O'Brien, Associate Professor of Political Science at UMass Boston. What else are we going to hear from the president? Jake Tapper, who now works for CNN, says that he's going to be announcing a troop withdrawal from Afghanistan. I thought we already did that.
Yeah.
Right. So good. I'm not the only one.
We're announcing that again.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Right.
It's like, have you noticed how many times the number two person in Al-Qaeda has been killed? We're keeping track of that. We've actually been adding
it's like
up
Manny Ramirez's
at least
grandmother.
40 times.
Or student grandmother.
Al-Qaeda killed it. It's like, how many more troops are there in there that we can withdraw?
No, I know.
know, I think there's more. I think there's a general lack of excitement about this particular State of the Union. We pretty much know in there. We just did these elections.
Well, it just comes after the inauguration.
Yeah, exactly. I just feel like we'll all, or most of us, a lot of us will watch tonight. And there'll be the laundry list. It'll be the economy. It'll be immigration. It'll be jobs. But it's nothing we haven't already heard. And so, I think he's missing an opportunity by not redoing the campaign in the State of the Union to do something bigger, broader, different, make us pay attention.
But he'll talk about immigration.
Wait, you're defeatist. Yeah. You're just assuming he's not going to do that.
Me too, by the way. Well, no, I think I know what he'll do. But yes, you're right. I was not a born optimist. But that's what I think will go on. And there's a reason most people
aren't
excited.
And this is the year to do it. This is right after the inauguration. Yeah. This is the time. He's got the whole 4 years ahead of him.
Go big or go home.
Well, that's right. And he's only got a couple years before he becomes a lame duck, basically. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't have a whole lot of time left.
Oh, so the big question is, how long will he go? Starts
now,
at 9?
I think it'll be interesting to
shorter
see.
Shorter than
the,
Clinton.
Right.
Yeah. It won't be an hour 40
responses.
Minutes.
Oh, yeah,
let's talk about
the
that.
Responses.
The two responses. We've got Marco Rubio. And who's the other guy?
Rand Paul.
Yeah. Oh, Rand Paul, right.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, the Tea
Rand Paul.
Party.
He's the Tea Party, the response to the response.
Right. I think
he'll probably be pretty entertaining.
He will be entertaining. But I think it's good that he's doing that because I think the more opportunities people like Rand Paul get up to – you know, where Americans can actually listen to what they have to say, the faster the Tea Party will recede. so
exposure.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, Rand Paul, I'm fascinated that they're still doing the response to response.
It's
just bad politically.
Lost its...
I mean, this is Boehner's problem.
Well, who's giving him and are the networks
that's just,
clearing it?
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's fascinating. It's like, this Republican congressman who has Ted Nugent coming. I know
didn't
it
they
sounds
learn from Clint Eastwood.
I know that's a good point. I know it sounds ridiculous, but I'm pretty confident that most Americans, regardless of partisanship, do not want somebody who has threatened a president in the chamber for the State of the Union.
Yeah,
it's just absurd. I don't care if you love George Bush or Obama.
You sure he's going to be there? Doesn't seem right.
Yes, he's been invited by, I don't know, the Republican Congress, or maybe I just don't want to give him extra
they'll
attention.
They'll check that out. Who is that, Edgar? Who's the congressman who invited
Ted
Nugent? Oh, somebody from Texas. I bet I know who it was. I'm blanking on the guy's name, but he had some other bizarre thing going on.
And that's just absurd. I mean, that's part of the problem with the Republican Party. As Charlie was saying, I think the more you hear from Rand Paul on the great libertarian, people will retreat. But that sort of just stupid gaffe of inviting somebody who the Secret Service has investigated, it hurts the brand.
By the way,
and it shows the splintering.
I was talking about technology, and Steve Stockman of Texas is your congressman.
Oh, very good.
Apple CEO Tim Cook is going to be sitting next to Michelle Obama at the State of the Union. So obviously he is going to reference technology in some point, but I don't think he's going to be pointing fingers at Kendall Square, but certainly the
won't be a regional
investment.
Shout out.
No, we need that. We need a regional shout out. Forget California.
Well, I just thought of this. Think of the different senators we'll have in the chamber to go from just a couple of years ago, Kennedy and Kerry,
unbelievable.
To now have Warren and
most people in this state could not name either one of our senators. I really believe that because they forget.
They could name Elizabeth Warren, I think, after the campaign. But
they forget.
This new
Everybody
person,
forgets.
No.
Mo Cowan, no.
Yeah. No, definitely not Mo Cowan. But yeah, Senator John Kennedy, Senator John Kerry, Senator Ted Kennedy, and both of them out of office.
The cameras would go to New England in past State of the Unions.
But John Kerry would be right up there, right up there in an important position. I wonder if he'll wear red. No, I'm just kidding. Well, all the secretaries of state have been women recently, so they always wear something kind of outstanding. I'm talking to Charlie Chipio from Chipio Strategies and Aaron O'Brien, an associate professor of political science at UMass Boston. More of politics as usual. We'll get into the local Senate race. We were just talking about our senators. Big race coming up. I'm Emily Rooney. You're listening to Boston Public Radio on 89.7. I'm Emily Rooney. This is Boston Public Radio. We're talking politics with Aaron O'Brien, Associate Professor of Political Science at UMass Boston, and Charlie Chipio of Chipio Strategies. Well, the Senate race here is getting a little more interesting. We've got two Democrats in, Representative Ed Markey, Representative Stephen Lynch. Now we've got two Republicans, Representative Dan Winslow, and former Navy SEAL Gabriel Gomez announced today. A couple other people considering, but here's an ad that Gabriel Gomez has just released, a little bit of it.
Me llamo Gabriel Gomez, y hoy estoy anunciando que voy a correr para ser senador en los Estados Unidos. For those of you who don't speak Spanish, today, I'm announcing my run for U.S. Senate. I spent my career as a Navy SEAL and a businessman right here in Boston. I'm not a politician, so I'll have a very different kind of campaign. If you're happy with the way things are going in our government, I'm not your kind of candidate.
So, I don't know anything about him. What I just heard is all I know. Former Navy SEAL, and he's a businessman. I'm not even sure what kind of
used
businessman.
Used to be independent, I think.
Cohasset businessman. Yeah. I don't know. He's Cohasset. Don't know that much of him. He has hired some former Romney people.
Gale, he must have some
Kishko.
Money.
He's supported by
Kaufman.
Ron Kaufman. Yeah, it sounds like he probably has. Yeah, I don't know. We know Dan Winslow well, of course, because very colorful, outspoken, and very direct. I mean, he has a lot of respect, I think.
Dan will certainly run an interesting campaign. He'll put forward, you know, creative ideas. I mean, very, very bright guy. So
I mean, the challenge is they're both not Scott Brown for the Republicans.
Mm-hmm. You know, and they have to get known and raise money
exactly.
fast.
And it's not that Scott Brown didn't do that, but it was an entirely different political context. So, you know, I think they're both also Rands, quite frankly. And I think, you know, it might, you know, this Gomez, it might be great for him. He'll start to get some name recognition. The party might seek to promote him later. But anybody who runs, I think, this time for the Republicans is really just taking one for the team.
Yeah, I think Dan is Dan is an up-and-comer, I think. I mean,
I totally agree.
Yeah,
with
I just run.
Yeah, well, get his
well,
name out
same
there.
Same reason you know. Just said about
right,
Gabriel Gomez.
Right, right. You know? I mean, I just think, you know, it may not be his time yet, but I do think he's got, you know, he's got a – as much as a Republican in Massachusetts can have a bright political future, Dan does.
Well, you know, I was thinking about it in terms of the Democratic side. Ed Markey, at first people felt bad – or not felt bad. At first it was like, oh, no, he's going to have a contested primary. The best thing that ever happened to Ed Markey was Stephen Lynch.
Right. Tell me why you think so.
Because I think elite Democrats, institutional Democrats, got gave pretty much the nomination to Markey, and that didn't. It felt icky for technical terms, but it didn't feel right. It didn't feel good to a lot of grassroots folks. But now you've got the difference between Markey, who has a pretty progressive record, especially on environmental issues, and Stephen Lynch, who is quite conservative, pro-life. You know, he's modified that a little bit, but he voted against health care. So now you've got a very conservative Democrat running against Markey, and the grassroots support amongst Democrats has gone to Markey. All of a sudden, they're excited about him. So initially, I think Markey was not pleased to have a contested primary, but of course, that's when they were thinking Scott Brown.
What I find annoying, he's doing all the things that every single candidate who feels they have the leg up have done in the past, you know. Jerking around about the debates, you know, not doing media. It's like, oh, come on, Ed.
Right.
Well, this is why I have found this whole process, it's been very odd to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not one at this point to knock Tammany because they've done exceptionally well. They win everything. So maybe maybe I'm missing something. I don't know. But it just seems to me that to take the guy who is like the for you know, whether he really is this in real life or not, who is the essence of the longtime party guy, and just try to clear the field for him. I don't know. Strategically, I just seems to me like you're asking for a backlash.
I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was brilliant. He had every duck lined up before he made the announcement. He had the Senate Democrats.
People don't react.
People
don't react.
Who's
well
people?
To that.
Those people. That,
those progressive Democrats were like grassroots progress. Were like, really? And Markey, like, for those reasons, we didn't have any influence in this. This is just the guys at the top picking again.
Smoke-filled room.
This exactly feels gross. And that's where I think Stephen Lynch coming
and
in actually helps.
And here's what I think. I think what would have changed that. Here's the thing I'm going to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but here's the thing I thought.
You
are. They're not all wrong.
That's right. I'm paranoid, but, you know, they really are after me. I thought it was very interesting the way Jerry Leone suddenly said, well, maybe I am interested in this. And about 45 seconds later, he suddenly announced that he wasn't.
I've been told I'm not interested.
Yes, that's right. Because I think that Markey, I think you're right. I think in this one-on-one, Markey does very well. Mm-hmm. I think to bring in another option really muddies the waters for him and would have created.
But I mean, don't you think Jerry Leone was victim of one of those media ambushes where somebody says, Jerry, would you consider? And he goes, well, and before you know it, he's the flavor of the month or the day and everything. And then he stepped back and he said, don't
day.
Wait a second.
Yeah, he's a smart guy, though.
He's
not going to get ambushed too
much. I don't know that you come out and say, well, I'd look at it, a week after you said I'm done.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Without, I don't think that's just an off-the-cuff remark.
So what's your prediction on this one, Aaron?
I think it's straightforward now. The Democrats aren't going to be surprised by someone on the right. I think Ed Markey wins the primary. I think Ed Markey wins the Senate seat in a low turnout race that people are not particularly excited about.
It's hard to disagree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with it, too. I mean, it's always interesting, and there are just so many twists and turns, as we saw with the Scott Brown-Martha Coakley race. People were saying the exact same thing, of course, about that race at the time.
Right.
And it was one of these short-term exact same things. She was way ahead. She was the popular Democrat. She beat a much larger field of incredibly popular Democrats.
Yep.
A lot of congressmen and other people, and she was a shoo-in at the time. I remember talking to Mayor Menino just a couple days. He was on Greater Boston a couple days before the election, and after we were taping, I turned to him and I said, "She's not going to lose this, is she?" And he says, "Absolutely not." I mean, even though things were looking, the tide had turned. Everybody was leaning toward it, but he just couldn't believe that a Democratic state was going to let that happen.
Well, when things change that fast, you're always behind it, almost by definition.
And it was such the perfect storm came together, and I just don't see that happening this time. I'd left the country for 10 days and came back, and I was like, "What happened to this race?" Just being gone for those 10 days, it was a completely different race. But there's no healthcare debate. Obama's popular right now, and Democrats know they can lose. So there's no way they're not going to take this race seriously this go round.
Yeah.
All right. Talking to Aaron O'Brien, from Associate Professor of Political Science at UMass Boston, and Charlie Chipio Strategies. I just want to talk about Governor Patrick's proposed $34.8 billion 2014 budget. All right. Laugh at me if you will. I think the blizzard of 2013 is actually going to help him, because a lot of what he's saying about these tax increases and everything else is we need it for our struggling and failing infrastructure system, specifically transportation. I mean, I don't know if the T would have shut down anyway if there had been an infusion of $12 billion into it. Yeah, exactly.
But,
Emily,
if that's what his proposal was, that might be the case, but that is not what his proposal is. Because the fact of the matter, I mean, really, Scott Leahide just said it beautifully in The Globe the other day. It is absolutely true. If you were to create a roadmap to get us right back into the same mess that we are in today, 20 years down the line, it would be this. Look, we need a lot of new money in transportation, but it all needs to go to maintaining and upgrading what we have, because we have been down this road before. We have the fastest growing major transit system in America, in one of the slowest growing metropolitan areas, and it's a mess because in order to fund that expansion, we have let the system rot from underneath it. And to lowball the prices of all these new projects, and to once again not include the cost of maintaining them or operating them in your estimates. I mean, this is when I look at this, all I can think is he's got to just be doing this so that, because he really wants to get just half of it, and this is the way he thinks he's going to get it. Because this does not make sense.
To me, this is the first time I've been convinced he's looking at running for president.
I am taking this bet. You guys, let's up the ante.
I'm not saying he'll win.
He is not
I'm not saying the campaign president. Will last long, but this
is run for
such,
anything.
This my view is that this is such a progressive.
You tell it, Aaron.
That's
no.
right. But I've been
Charlie,
a naysayer.
You are so
going
to eat this. Your words.
Yes. Oh, how, what are we betting? I have nothing.
I'll go to Sky.
I think that it's so progressive. I think he's trying to put forward this is the way Democrats can be truly. Progressive.
Yep.
It's sort of like the third way. It's the opposite of, the Clinton Democrat, the new Democrat. So I think I don't think he'd be successful in a national run, but I do think this budget is aimed at a national stage more so than
feels
in
very
the past.
Local schmuckle to me.
Oh, no. No,
I think
look, this guy is an unbelievable communicator, and I think I think he has the ability to really energize the base. And would I say he's going to win? No, I probably agree with you, but I think he could make a very serious run.
This is a budget that says big government isn't bad government.
Right.
Big government helps you. Big government in a storm can get you from here to there. I mean, that's his vision on it.
Yep.
So I don't understand how this would make us first in the United States in income tax when California – I mean, they're at 51%. That's why Phil Mickelson and people like that are moving out. I don't blame them.
Well,
how do we get to be number one? Anybody know the math?
Well,
on that?
I think it's overall. I don't think it's income tax.
Okay. I've lived in other states. My property taxes are quite much lower here.
Speak for yourself.
they are. So this idea of Taxachusetts just doesn't comport with a lot of our reality. It depends on how you – it's like anything in economics. You can have good indicators that point in different ways.
Aaron, what you got to do is if you own your place, you got to escrow the property tax because you're going to get such agita every time if you actually have to pay the thing quarterly. It's much better to just escrow it and put it in.
Oh, see, no, I hate that. I'm not giving the bank my money before they – or anybody. I wait till the last minute and send in a check or I do it online.
Right.
I like that because, I'm the biggest snoop in the world. I go around checking out everybody. See how much their property taxes are, whether they've paid them. I could be like,
oh, you must love that Herald thing where you can see what everybody in state government's
making.
I don't like that so much.
Do.
I'm interested in taxes. I'm interested in what property taxes people pay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you can find out online, who owns it, how much they pay, or if they're in arrears. So it's fascinating.
I would now.
It's like dating,
it
only
is,
checking the whole
that's
your
right.
stocking.
Now, I would
that
say
way.
I would say one thing about this, and this is odd coming from me, who is not generally a lover of taxes, but there is something that's a little misleading in that when you compare Massachusetts taxes to other states, we are high, but we're not quite as high as we seem simply because of the fact that in other states you have county taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have counties, so that's.
But other places
a lot of
don't
stuff.
Have excise taxes. We
right.
Have
no, that's right. No, we're still high.
And the thing is, that's a progressive tax. If you don't own a car, you don't have that. And so.
But they have it reversed. The newer cars should be paying less. They're less wear and tear. They're better for the environment. I never understood that. If your car is 27 years old, you're emitting a lot more junk. You're losing your hubcaps. It's what the heck?
That assumes that the tax is there for the reasons they say it is, right?
Right.
It's punishment for buying a new car.
It's revenue. And
they
so
just need
gets,
the money.
It gets wrapped up in environmental causes, and I think that's part of it. But it's also revenue. But it does speak to the way we tax in Massachusetts is, that is a progressive tax. Poor people don't pay it. And if you have – most poor people do have cars, but they're not nice cars, quite frankly. And so that tax is much lower.
Right.
Hmm. I'm getting a note here from the control room. They're saying that, the group Anonymous that disrupts all kinds of things. Apparently, they're going to try to disrupt the State of the Union tonight over the death of Aaron Schwartz, MIT kid who downloaded all that stuff that the Justice Department then went after him for. Anyway, I don't know how they're going to actually end up doing it. They're going to try to interrupt the live stream, too. But if I know about it, I think the FBI and the CIA know about it, so I'm wondering if this is going to actually happen. But.
It's interesting about this group. Was it Hagel's or was it – it was Kerry's hearings.
Kerry. That was –
they got up.
He handled that so well.
He did handle it well.
But not any schmo is going to walk into the State of the Union.
Right, no,
address.
That's right.
Well,
but I just find
we've seen it in the past.
I just find it interesting that it's like they come out of that and they go back and they have their little meeting and they say, oh, this was great. We kept interrupting it. And of course, it's like, do you realize that you just made everybody who reads the paper just hate you? Because, you know, I mean, there's just such a disconnect in terms of what their goals are.
Their audience isn't everyone. No, their audience is speaking to other folks who, the way that kid, he's not a kid, he was 25, but 26. It was treated was quite egregious. And so, you know, they're not aiming at the average viewer, right? They're aiming to a particular group that feels quite strongly about transparency and open information.
Plus, I disagree because I think oftentimes the interrupters get way more attention than they should because people are focusing on it. I mean, when that happened with John Kerry, everybody, who was that? What did they say? What did they say? What did John Kerry say back to him? So it became
in political science, we
bigger
call it,
than the story really was.
Expand the scope of the bias in the fancy term. But the best way to – I know, right? God, that degree. No, but when a fight breaks out, watch the crowd because the crowd determines who wins, right? Uh-huh. If they can cause a fight – right? They can get more people interested and potentially on their side. Without causing a fight, existing power structures determine the outcome and they're always going to lose.
So this
so
is
it's
why
– it's a weapon of the weak.
This is why they never show the streakers anymore like at the Red Sox game.
That used to be awesome.
They never do that anymore.
Yeah. But the idea behind the concept though is you change the conversation by starting the fight. You can't determine the outcome if you're the disadvantaged party. But you change the conversation. Like Emily said, people are starting to pay attention and all of a sudden they know this kid's name. They want to know, well, he was just giving out JSTOR documents.
Yeah, right.
Like I loved it. I was like, people are trying to hack social science websites and give it out free. You know, like this was my dork land, nerd land was like loving it, right? But if they're able to be successful in that way, they're hoping that it changes a conversation. Yeah. I'm sorry?
I think people were rooting for him.
Yeah.
That was a very
his whole
sad
thing was
case.
Just making stuff accessible. I mean, he wasn't a classic hacker.
No, he was not. No, that's right.
He really wasn't a hacker.
That's right.
You know?
Well, and a lot of the hackers would say he is a classic hacker.
Hmm. Well, that's true.
By bringing that information forward.
Yeah.
You know?
He doesn't fit our version
right.
of a hacker.
Yeah, he wasn't trying to get your social security number.
Right.
He was trying to say, how come these corporations own information? And what are the labor practices behind that? So, he has
A lot of it was professorial, theses and all that kind of junk. First place. It's like I said, who's upset about this? The professors are going to get $12.50 an article? It's like, who cares?
We don't get anything.
I had to buy it from MIT, I think you would have.
It's through JSTOR, which is one of the places you can go and get all these articles.
Okay, so wait, the professor doesn't end up getting, whose intellectual property is it?
You have to... You give it to JSTOR.
Off the subject,
you don't get anything from it.
What?
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Well, who does?
JSTOR.
Why would you give it to them?
Because you need to publish or else you don't get
publish
tenure.
Publish or perish.
Exactly.
Oh, and so they're just taking advantage of you.
Right. Exactly. It's a labor issue.
Oh, all the more reason to make it free.
Yeah.
So they have it in their closed access. If you're not on a college campus, you can't get access to that without major information. And so you're writing these articles and a lot of them are not all of them, but they're important and they're radical in some ways or they aim to change political conversation and no one reads them because they can't get access to them.
Hmm. All right. Anything anybody else wants to discuss before we end our stretch a little. Stretch a little. We're ready for Roger Abrams. They're going to have a fun conversation.
I want to talk about the drone stuff.
Yeah, let's talk
about
that. Yes, I totally do. Because I am fascinated by the fact the domestic use, when I heard about the domestic
use. The guy in Los Angeles?
Yes, the LAPD, the former LAPD.
I think that's cool.
I was thinking all
these. Well, we should say for people who don't know what we're talking about. There's been some talk
about
using.
Well, the people already know that.
About using drones to strike this rogue former police officer who's been killing people out in California and has a bunch of people on his hit list. And this, of course, controversy in the wake of discovering that the administration was using drones to strike Americans who had allegedly
suspected of being terrorists
in the Middle East. So
I think the two things are going on a little bit separately, but I think it's potentially a game changer because drones, both with Brennan and this LAPD guy, the fact that it's being used domestically, the drone conversation has been so drones are very popular right now amongst American citizens, but there's been a lot of activism and a lot, especially in the Arab American community and Muslim American community, saying these drones are indiscriminately killing, and it's causing more people to hate us if you
will. I
don't
believe that.
Well, it's 6 to 18 to 23% of them kill civilians. If that happened here, people would lose their mind.
It's the high-tech version of the landmine debate,
yeah.
You know, 15
yeah,
years
exactly.
ago.
Right.
Yeah.
Or
IEDs
and if landmines
or,
were here,
you know,
we'd
they're all
go
killing
crazy.
Innocent people.
Right. And so what I'm saying, though, is that people are starting mm-hmm. to have a problem with that. At first, they were very popular because it was during the war
yeah.
or the higher portion of the war. And people were saying,
Hiroshima,
we're sick of this.
Most of the
exactly.
Innocent.
It's that logic.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
This is a smaller scale. Yeah.
But I think
it's
entered the domestic politic mm. lexicon.
I think it's very cool. So a butterfly comes up and blows this guy away.
Yeah. But, I mean, but this whole Dorner thing is really interesting. Just hear the story about this, the LA radio producer who comes home with his family at night and his wife and kid are walking up into the house. And there's all these people with machine guns on his on his deck. Yeah, because it turns out that they think one of Dorner's victims lives on the guy's street.
Oh.
And it was just – it's a wild story. He interviewed the cops. Very interesting
stuff. All these people who are so – we need our guns to protect ourselves from government – the fact
just
that we're
using,
but well, no, the fact that we're using drones in domestic politics is going to make them say, "This is why we need our guns. This is why we need our guns because they're turning drones on American citizens."
I got news for you. Whatever they say, they're going to say, "This is why
good
we need."
Right, but good luck shooting
but
a drone
adds,
out of this.
It
guy.
Adds fuel to their fire.
Yeah. All right. Well, it would be awesome if you asked me if they got him with a drone.
Okay. Well, he says he's got like shoulder held. Like land to
yeah, sure,
air.
I'm sure he does. But getting a drone. And these drones can be like a butterfly. They can be tiny.
But they've also reopened. Really? Oh, they've reopened a lot of those cases that he was involved with. Mm-hmm. And so for a lot of people, it pulls on this. The public image of the LAPD is not a positive one, especially the farther away you get from LA.
True.
So I think he's been successful in potentially.
You don't know who we're rooting for. No, that's all.
Well, exactly.
Okay.
I think that's exactly. For some folks, I think you're 100% right.
All right, been talking to Aaron O'Brien and Charlie Chipio. Politics as usual. Thank you much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Edgar B. Herwick III, you're going to be having even more fun.
Yeah, we're going to shift to bombs of a different kind. Yeah. These are the bombs that go out of the ballpark.
Yeah.
Today is the beginning of the 2013 season.
Awesome.
Spring training, starting pitchers and catchers reporting. We can already officially report the first injury of the year.
No.
Clay Buchholz.
No.
Just a minor strain. In his leg. He's going to be fine. He's day to day.
So Roger Abrams is in Fort Myers. What the heck?
He's
doing
down
here?
In Florida for spring training.
Oh,
he's
good
living.
For him.
He's living the
living
good life.
Good life.
Yeah, no
All
kidding.
All right. I'm Emily Rooney.
I'm Edgar B. Herwick III.
And this is Boston
Public Radio.
Yep.